Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today. Cole Porter's Kiss Me, Kate won the first ever Tony Award for Best Musical. That was in 1948. The reimagining of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew was a show within a show, follows a diva actress, Lily, and her smarmy but charming ex-husband, Fred, through their tumultuous and tune-filled road to reconciliation. Now, those of you familiar with the play and the musical know that in 2019, a storyline where a strong woman is tamed by a man is not really going to play. So when the Roundabout Theater decided to take on the production for a Broadway revival of Kiss Me, Kate, adjustments were made to the script, and a cast with strong men and strong women was put in place, and the show has pulled off what Variety described as a production, quote, filled with musical pleasures that audiences will appreciate. It's good old-fashioned, new-fashioned musical. Here's the trailer. Another old man. Another show, another old man, another show, another old man, another old man, another old man, another show. It's another old man.
Kiss Me, Kate is running now at Studio 54 and has been extended until June 30th. Joining us today are the stars of Roundabout Theater's Kiss Me, Kate, Kelly O'Hara. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
And
awesome.
Will Chase. Hi,
hello.
Will.
Hello there.
When was the first time either of you saw Kiss Me, Kate or Taming of the Shrew?
Well, I saw the revival. We are a revival. I saw the last revival in 1999 with Maren Mazzie and Brian Stokes Mitchell. Maren, one of my great all-time heroes, who's no longer with us. So that was a huge turning point for me as far as inspirational things for a soprano, a strong soprano lead. So I remember at that time, 20 years ago, thinking, gosh, maybe I'll play this someday. Maybe I'll be like Maren Mazzie.
Same. I didn't want to be Maren Mazzie or Brian Stokes, but I saw that revival and it was unbelievable, I thought. And that was, you know, I think that was the time when, I mean, there's been revivals of shows over the years, but it seemed like there was a chunk of time where people really started to reinvent, and why are we doing a revival as opposed to, oh, it's just time. And I just absolutely loved it. They sang that score so beautifully. And Taming of the Shrew, I think I saw a production. That's how good it might have been. when I was on the road doing something, doing like Miss Saigon years ago, and there was a local production of it. But other than that, I've never seen it other than
television. Yeah, I haven't seen a production. In fact, I don't think they do them very often anymore.
I saw Janet McTeer.
Oh, right on.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Play it in Central Park with Cush Jimbo, the whole female version.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, please.
She was kind of great. She was kind of a Dennis Leary meets Keith Richards.
Yeah.
Her portrayal.
Well, see, now that I should have seen that.
I know.
Make sure you guys should check it out if you can.
Okay.
So, Kelly, can you describe, this is a two-parter, can you describe Fred's character? And then can you describe how Lily sees Fred?
Oh, interesting. Oh, my God. Okay, so you're sitting right in front of me, but... you know, Fred's character actually kind of looked different to me on paper than the way that Will Chase is giving me Fred's character. You know, we could be very stereotypical with actors and actresses in the show, and there is a lot of that because that's sort of where the humor comes from, and we're putting ourselves out there on a plate for you. But Fred is an actor, egotistical, insecure in ways, very powerful in other ways, very determined to kind of make, create, produce, direct his own piece of work so that he gets it done, maybe in a time when things aren't just happening for him, so he's going to go out and build it. I think he's a man in general with his
a man in general.
Wow.
But not
and
specifically.
Let's erase that. No, it's true. I mean, you know, we see him definitely surrounded by the ladies, and he's making time with a younger one when he's kind of divorced from his old flame. But I think that you're playing it much more. There's more layers to it, which make it easier for someone like for the audience to see Lily wanting to go back to that. And the second part of your question was
how Lily sees Fred.
Okay, so Lily sees Fred. You know, here's the thing about how I want to play Lily. You know, I've been with my husband for 16 years. I love him. I'm still into my guy. I really am. And, you know, ups and downs like any other marriage, but I really kind of still think he's pretty fantastic. And that thorns and all, both of us, when you feel that way about a person, you tend to gloss over. And for whatever failings Fred has, Lily, as annoyed as she's trying to focus on those, she's trying to focus on the bad, because really all she sees is the gloss, really. And that's, she can't help herself. And that's the song, So In Love. You can hurt me, you can taunt me. It's not about being a weak woman. It's about that thing. As long as the person's not, he's never hurt me. We don't even talk about the fact that there was any philandering. We don't. We say, whose fault was it? We just didn't. We were two heads beating against each other. So I really think that Fred sees Lily. He is her one true love. But she was, she's trying to live in the world right now of, I don't need you. I can be without you. And we all know it's pretty much she's a fraud. And I'm okay with that. Yeah. I mean, I think we don't play things just because that's what we want to imagine and see right now. Mm-hmm. I think we play the reality so that we can, my hope is that the audience is seeing something they can filter through their own feelings and learn from that. I wouldn't do that, they might say, or that's how I've felt before. And how did I respond to those feelings and being weak and being taken over? I want to play something that seems real, whether or not you like it or not, you know? Mm-hmm.
Will, I'm going to ask you the same question. Can you describe Lily's character and then how Fred sees Lily?
Well, Lily, I think it's funny that you use the word diva in the intro and smarmy for me, but...
easy.
Maybe that's on the press. No, I'm kidding. I think Lily is very accomplished. I think she has something special. I think, and it's weird to think of how Will thinks of her as Fred, and that's different. I don't think of myself. I don't go home thinking I'm Fred, by the way. But I want to talk through Fred. Fred totally adores this woman. He knows she's special. I don't think when they set out to do this piece that he thought, well, we'll rekindle this flame. I think he thought, well, we'll just get together, we'll do this thing, it'll be a huge success. And of course Fred wants to be successful. He also wants that kind of movie star thing that she has. It's the reason Will grew out his mustache and tried to look more like the Errol Flynn's and the Clark Gables rather than the theater actors of the time. I think Fred wants to be that, maybe to her subconsciously, maybe be that movie star because he's had enough failures and things like that. And I think he is truly in love with her. Like she was saying, all the bad stuff, at the very end of our show, we have this lovely little coda where we kind of walk off together. I don't think anybody in the audience thinks, oh, it's all going to be hunky-dory. I think they still think they're going to throw plates at each other, but it's going to be hot.
And they might have good sex.
But that's real. And that's the thing that Scott, our director Scott Ellis, and we tried to do throughout the rehearsals and what Kelly was saying. We want to make those moments real. I love messy. I love when I watch plays or movies or whatever, I love messy because that's real. And how do those people go through that? Do they find each other? And I think with our approach to this show, and I think if you do Shrew now, even Taming of the Shrew, if you don't find the love that's in the text, I think that's supported in the text of both Taming of the Shrew and Kiss Me, Kate. If you don't find the love or play the love, you're kind of screwed from the get-go because why do you want to watch, this show has always been done with two people just beating each other and then off stage these two are still beating each other, and I think you have to find that love in both things or else there's no real interesting reason to tell that story dramatically, I think.
My guests are Kelly O'Hara and Will Chase, and we're talking about the revival of Kiss Me, Kate. You guys have great chemistry. Before these mic even went on, you two are rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat. When did you first meet?
We met 2000, probably before, but we did, the first thing we did together was a centennial production for the state of Oklahoma, in Oklahoma. 2007.
In her home state.
You playing Curly, me, Laurie. And immediately. I mean, I think we've got similar sensibilities, and he's very, very funny, and almost as charming as he thinks he is. And
wow.
I really...
I'm right here.
Okay, so Kiss Me, Kate's a documentary.
I'm right here, basically.
Well, you are very Fred, but there is I mean, who wears more makeup? He works Will. Really hard on the single curl that comes down from his forehead.
Hey, let's all with Fred. Yeah.
But we just exchanged some text last night. We're really, really feeling pretty grateful to be working together right now. There's a sense you can have a lot of fun with somebody and you have chemistry with them and actually be having a very good professional relationship. But when you're really just comfortable and not having to, you know, jump over hoops or kind of breathe through a certain kind of frustration or try to be patient or whatever it is, there's just none of that. We're just kind of holding, you know, we're falling on each other, holding each other, catching each other, lobbing some things to each other. Yeah. It's just we're having a great time.
We have.
And I'm grateful.
It's very interesting. It's not the first time I thought about it, but maybe the first time I'm verbalizing. We have the same sensibilities toward our insecurities. which only comes from a friendship that we have, but knowing each other's insecurities kind of helps you when you're, one, creating something like this, and then having to then do it every mm-hmm. night. Those moments of, you can joke going, oh, I'm not in great voice tonight. I know there's a little like...
And I'll be like, okay, you're right, but let's...
but I know that I can look at her on this duet or whatever, and then we've got each other, or we'll breathe through this moment, or well, you got this. This is one moment, and then we got to play the next moment. And I think there's something to be said about sharing a shared insecurity.
But
you know?
I would also say that I don't... You're so really solid. You know what I mean? Like, I can depend on this guy a lot. Like, I don't, there aren't days when he's like, I just don't feel like, no, it's like 110%. And I think we're both kind of that way. You know, we can depend on each other. And that's really comfortable. I also feel like our relationship, we did work together back then, but we also worked together over and over again throughout the years in different ways. And we kind of hit each other at some very personal moments in our lives where we talk some things through together, you know.
Guess as friends, happening? As friends.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Guess what's happening in my real life while we're... And so by the time we met up on this one, it's just all that's kind of done for us. And now we're just looking at the show, which is really funny. And we really fun. And then to be able to laugh a lot is exactly what I wanted. And he's good for that. He's definitely good for that.
Thank you.
What a weirdo.
Thank you.
Your characters brawl.
We brawl.
You smack him, which can let me describe, smack him upside the head.
Twice. And then on the face twice. And sometimes three or four times if she feels like she misses. If Kelly feels like she misses a good strike on my face, she'll go ahead and do another one.
Yeah.
And the look of shock on my face. And then she'll whisper as she's walking off stage, sorry. That's what's happening in real life, people.
Yep.
I thought, do you have brothers?
I do.
Because the way you did that, I'm like, that's not the first time. Yeah.
She compares me to one of her brothers, in fact.
Yeah, he reminds me very much of my brother. I think that's what this is all about. Yeah.
What goes into the choreography of those fights?
Well, it's interesting. We did so much. And with these things, you can come out with such a piece that is structurally pretty darn good and it's been successful. And you can just do a caricature of the whole thing. You really can. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can slap, spank, and and Fred can put his hands on his hips and Lily can go, eh, you know. You can do that. But when you go into these big, huge Broadway revivals, you put so much extra work into the back part of it that nobody really knows about. But we have to believe it gives layers.
Right.
So we did. We staged an entire blue version of our show, which means we did the Taming of the Shrew musical without me finding out about the flowers. So we did that whole version, and then put the red version on it, which is the day that I found out about the flowers. So we did all that, and in the choreography, we choreographed. 5 minutes of me, because I was like, it's time for Lily to beat the crowd.
Oh, mayhem! Yeah,
we created a thing where I'm taking benches and throwing him at his head, guillotines. Yeah. We did the whole thing.
It was Matrix kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then it's like chip.
Yeah, and then
chip.
Scott was like, okay, so that wouldn't really happen, though. She wouldn't really grab a bench and try to crush his skull.
Yeah, so let's take that. Let's cut that.
So we had about a 10-minute fight that got whittled down to about 3.5 minutes.
Well, you'd call it choreographic language by Rick Sordelet and his son Christian.
Right.
And then we had a bunch of pieces of language, and then as far as physical language. And then we cut it down to, let's do this here. This seems to work here. And all the scenes you see where there is physical stuff, it's all choreographed. Sometimes it's safer than other days when I'm feeling, I have this problem where I just get too red and I hurt people. Yeah. So I have to.
Least consistent fight actor in the world is Kelly O'Hara, but I'm there for it. No, it is all choreographed. And I think it all, again, is reality based. It's still very funny. Uh-huh. I mean, last night's audience, in fact, was just mayhem when you turned, you know, when I had you upside down. And that's so rewarding because they kept going, and I could have stood there for an hour. I mean, my back is going to pay for it.
Well, I'm hanging upside down, so thanks.
You were upside down a long time. I was there last night. You were upside down a long
time. Not usually that long, but he just held me up there. You know, that's the power.
And Mel, who plays Baptista, if he doesn't speak, then you'll just be there forever. But we wanted to base it in some sort of reality to where it gets so out of control that the stage manager has to come on and stop the show, which I think we do well.
Yeah.
My guests are Kelly O'Hara and Will Chase. We're talking about Kiss Me, Kate, which is running at Studio 54 until June 30th. I'm interested in technology with the show because at one moment in the show, Fred whispers to you, right? But you couldn't have done that years and years and years ago without mics.
Right?
You would have had to project to the back of the theater.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of curious if there's any other ways technology has helped this show develop or that you've observed that even though it's a very classic show, if there's any tech or modern things in the show.
I mean, I think that goes in general with any shows like that, that there's an aside or there's a whisper or something. You know, back in the day, he would have had to say it loud enough. And honestly, the mics are just helping us project anyway. I'm still saying it fairly loudly. But it's one of those reality moments that I had that for Will in the rehearsal room. I had to clock going, okay, so in reality, I would never say, I would be like, how dare you? I'm going to spank you. Right. Do you know what I mean? Which you can't do. And the audience is along. You know, as long as the conceit is set forward that the audience knows that Scott kept going in the fight, too. He kept going, we want to make sure that they know Will's not getting hurt. We want to see her kick Fred's butt.
Yeah.
We also want to make sure that the audience doesn't think, oh, Will's getting hurt by this. So you can't play it too, I know it sounds weird, real. You have to play the comedy of getting kicked in the butt on stage in front of an audience. That doesn't hurt. You know? So the whispering thing, it's an interesting notion. There are moments in the beginning when I come on and I'm talking to the company. And I say, where's Lucente? It looks like somebody's missing. I would never say this loud enough for everyone to hear, but, you know, you kind of do. So it's an interesting question about technology and how it
I think technology helps. Changes the form. And this is a lot of, I've had a lot of conversations with this because of being singing at the opera,
Right.
Because it is funny. I had people at the Met ask me, well, you guys don't sing every, if you're tired, you can just, they just patch in vocals for you, right? Like the miscommunication here, I think they must have been thinking about the one example of that is Christine and Phantom. I think they have a recorded high E that they play. That never happens in live theater. However, in musical theater, or because we have microphones, as opposed to like a Shakespearean play doing an aside where you would maybe. Whether it be to the audience or out, it's still very much performed.
Projected.
And there's a style to that in opera and in Shakespeare and in straight play. You know, there's a style that's forward, it's a presentational style. There is something that can happen with musical theater and things that use microphones, which, to me, it's for two reasons. To make it a little bit more realistic so that the form changes a tiny bit, even though then we break into song, so whatever. The second reason is we do 8 shows a week. At the Met, we do 2. There is a necessity. Not that I don't sing differently, but I, as far as technique and control, but volume, I'm not pressured to create this source of the sense of volume that you would be in the Met theater. So that's I think technology is very helpful in many ways, but I think everyone should go do something without it to remember the art form, know, and have both at your, you know, don't get, because when you go do cabaret, to further the point, you can really ruin yourself as a singer, because all of a sudden you're in there and you're like this, and all those ladies start to because you don't have to project, you hear your, just like right
I
now
I want to hear we a, sat a down full, a, I want to hear a full album of you going
well, but you and I sat down in these microphones and we're like, hello, hi, because
just,
it sounds so delicious to us. Anyway, so you have to be careful with microphones. You have to go out and stretch your muscles without them.
Man, I would love it if they could patch in like Domingo one night for me. You imagine? Do they patch in a vocal? Yeah. Can I get Stephen Pasquale on Monday?
Sutton Foster.
Right. Yeah. Thanks.
And when I really want to belt that high note, you know, Sutton comes in, saves the day.
I remember when I first started like doing tours in Miss Saigon and that, because I'd come from doing summer stock with to project Louise, sing out Louise. And I remember some kids that were like, oh yeah, the mic will take care of them. I'm like, no, you're still singing loud.
Well, that's the thing with
it's just you're singing over an orchestra that's mic'd.
Exactly.
You know?
But you want to tell students, you want to be like, don't? Yeah, but I'll be mic'd, so it won't. No. Get it all out there. And then, because the other thing is that the sound design for each individual, the sound designer can mic you the way he sees fit.
Right.
He won't mic me, say, as loud or as you know, with as much bounce presence, right, as he might give someone with right. who's singing a little bit. So anyway, it's technology is a confusing and wonderful and controversial thing in what we do.
Yeah.
My guests are Will Chase and Kelly O'Hara. We're talking about Kiss Me, Kate, which is running at Studio 54 through June 30th. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guests this hour are Kelly O'Hara and Will Chase. They are currently starring in Kiss Me, Kate. I'm interested, you guys, there are people in your cast who this is their Broadway debut. Mm. What is it like to work with somebody when it's their Broadway debut? What kind of advice do they ask? Does it bring up anything for you guys from your first time?
I mean, watching Stephanie Stiles at the first rehearsal.
Bawling.
It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. But then I was just going to say, and watching her come with guns a-blazing. Like, there was no, oh, I'm just a little flower. She was like, this character was kind of fully formed. And then who else is?
Jasmiel and Charisse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then to watch them the first day in tech, go on the Broadway stage, the actual stage, mm-hmm. be overwhelmed. And it conjured up I can remember the date, the time when it made my Broadway debut, what that feeling was like.
What was it?
Rent, January 30th, 1998. And, but it's one of those where I'd never sung, I was an understudy and I was in the ensemble. I never rehearsed with the orchestra. So when Jim Pullis went, the power blows and the band kicked in. I mean, right now it's even the hair, I was like, oh gosh, this is really happening. So to watch them go through that, we did the legacy robe and all that, and we're all crying. It's overwhelming. It's beautiful.
The three of them were crying together.
Beautiful, yeah.
I mean, Stephanie's been around the business for so long. She was a child actor and stuff. But so she's been working towards this with such passion and ambition and just zeal. And her energy is just gorgeous. Yeah. They all are. And you know, she will say, I remember... the pressure of being on Broadway, it just feels different if you don't, to everybody it feels different. You feel like you have this obligation to earn your keep, earn your spot, and you do. And she got sick in like the third or fourth week, and oh my gosh, she worried it. And she came to me and she said, it was a Wednesday, it was a two-show day, it was Tuesday night, she was losing her voice. We were still in previews, you know, it was nothing. And she said, I shouldn't say this online, but I'm going to. The doctor says to take a steroid. And get there. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is Tuesday. We have the rest of this week and then a 6-month run. I was like, you go home and you get in bed. Yeah. This is something I would not have known as my younger self. And I felt, it was one of the times I felt like, I know what I'm talking about. You go home and you don't give it a second thought. You steam, you sleep, you give yourself a break. And by Thursday, she was back in the show better than ever. She did not hurt her voice. We didn't get to Saturday and she was a crunchy, nasty, you know, like she could have hurt her vocal cords. But doctors and producers will tell you, oh, take that steroid.
Well, and you think the world, and on some level you think, oh my gosh, the whole show's riding on.
It.
And it's like, it's not.
Yeah.
Relax. The show will go on. Mm-hmm. And yet it sucks to kind of not be there. I've been there. And
I hate it.
Oh, it's the worst feeling.
You hate missing. You can't even get better because you're lying at home. Stressing all the people that are angry, and then you hear about it now with social media, and she's very active on social media. Like, where were you? I came all the way from whatever. And but she did it. She took care of herself, and then the show was able to have her more and better.
Right.
Whereas I think we all give ourselves these hard times and we push through. And I mean, I remember in King and I got that horrible flu because I kept pushing and could never get better and never get well. So that kind of advice is really fun to be able to give and to then, you know, see it benefit all of us and the show itself. And we haven't even thought twice about it since. And we had a great understudy go on, Christine. Yeah. And so, you know, and Jasmiel, she's a new mom. Both of the other girls who made their Broadway debuts, Jasmiel and Charisse, have just had babies. I mean, kicking their faces with, you know, they have these little babies at home.
I was like in pajamas and fuzzy slippers after I just had a kid.
I mean, in fact, Charisse, there's a great video of her. She came in for the audition for this show. She was 5 months pregnant. She had this huge, she's kicking her face. And they said, we know that we're not going to start this until January. And she was going to have the baby in what, I don't know.
I mean, it was crazy.
And she did it. So she is especially, they were so emotional to say, I did this, and my kid's going to know about it.
When you first heard Kiss Me, Kate, you know the story. You know some of the difficulties that would happen in 2019. I mean, a lot of people, when I saw Carousel, it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. But there's a moment in Carousel, sure, when I saw it last year, the whole audience went,
yeah.
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 You like it, love him, and he hits you. Yeah. It just right, didn't, right. It was just, you knew it was a time and place, but at the same time, it kind of gave you the creeps a little bit.
Right.
What's been rewritten in this show? So for people
a lot.
To make it a little bit more, well, actually a lot more palatable isn't the right word. That's right. Too negative a word. I'll think of a different word, but I'll let you answer.
No, but no, that's, you know, you're right. That is exactly a word I would use, because we couldn't change everything. Amanda Green came in and changed a lot. We cut a lot. I mean, that was the easier thing to do with the estate, was to say, you know, Will fought hugely to not say, I've off stuck a pig before. So he says, I've, what a boar of, yeah, what you say?
A fight like a raging boar. And then the next line was, I've oft stuck a pig before. And
that mean, yeah.
And to that point, you know, there were things that were, there are things, I play a lot of bad guys, mm-hmm, in television or whatever, and I play a lot of despicable people. And my litmus test, my thing is always, are there consequences for this character's behavior? If so, love playing them, because I really do, and I love that there are consequences. With the Petruchio, we already know that, we're already setting up, especially in Kiss Me, Kate, we're setting up that Petruchio is this machismo, has access to power, a tantrum thrower. So I thought, well, that's immediately, that kind of line takes us way out of it. It mm-hmm, makes us go, yeah, uh-huh, you know, and so why do that when we're already setting up this character like this and there's no repercussion for saying something as abhorrent as that? So we changed it, and it was a little thing, but I fought hard for it, and it wasn't fighting our, it wasn't our production. It was, you know, the estate going, no, I'm not going to say this. Not because I'm precious, not because the piece is precious and we don't want to whitewash, but because it takes us immediately out of, it takes the audience out, mm-hmm, of this thing. And then we have to rethink. We already know that he's this certain way. So to Kelly's point, it was more about little tweaks. The spanking was obviously a big one.
We took all the spanking out. We changed the entire lyric of the last song, which was, I am ashamed that women are so simple. Now it's very much, we didn't run the pendulum all the way back and say men, but we said, let's be partners in our relationships, all, mm-hmm, of you. Let's all work together. If it's deserved, you know, like your relationship, you just need to work together. We tried to balance it out a little bit more. We did poke fun at men sometimes more than has been before. However, you can't take out a lot of the misogyny. I mean, some of the things that used to be just hysterically funny are now used, and we keep them in for poignancy, for you to listen and say, God, that's that guy's a jerk. Let's not, mm-hmm, let's not behave like that. I can't help that Lily's storyline still depends on a man savior. I mean, she's in a position to, if she doesn't want to be with Fred, she has to go be with the general.
But she makes a choice, though.
She does make a choice.
It felt much more like an autonomous choice.
Yeah, and whether or not she's gonna, she's making a choice to leave, but she has been being held by gunpoint, so she needs somebody to come help her, I guess. But I can't change that, but we can change, for instance, why Kate is angry. Is she angry because she's a nasty, crazy woman? Does she sing I Hate Men and be dismissed because she's just a fool? Or does she have reason to sing it? And that was one of my big goals. Mm-hmm. I think Kate, in a way, is more recognizable in 2019 than Lily. And Lily's a 1940s film actress.
I totally
actress.
Agree with you.
And so I feel like I have to give Lily the things that Lily needs to tell this story. Kate is very satisfying. But what's interesting to me is Matinee Days, which usually are my jam people. Mm-hmm. I mean, South Pacific, you know, whatever. I make people uncomfortable with Kate.
Interesting. The sort of more traditional.
They love so in love. They love a Lily who's in love with Fred, even if it's difficult. I start to sing I Hate Men or yell in a powerful way that's
that
not
fight.
Or the fight, but in a way that's grounded as opposed to just crazy and silly, right? I'm just an out of hand woman because I'm
right.
crazy.
A shrew.
Right. Well, let's use the word.
Yeah.
But when I start to say things that actually, that I didn't change any of those lyrics. That was written in 19. Right. You know, the man he's going to tell you he's busy on business. The business is that he's is the business he gives his secretary. You know, that kind of thing. I look down sometimes, and some of the older crowd is giving me you've just made our lunch after the show is going to be very uncomfortable. My husband and I are not going to have a good day.
And I'm like, woohoo!
You know, but it's interesting because I'm fascinated by how much we want to change. And you hear the young girls screaming, you know, the Corbin Blue fans, they're screaming and they love it. But then I'm like, look, there we are in an in-between place. But, you know, I'll always fight for doing those things. You mentioned Carousel. And I'll always fight for Carousel because we don't want to see a battered woman who still loves the man who's hitting her doesn't mean it's not happening every second we speak right now. Mm-hmm. Do we not tell their stories? I don't want to say that we are sympathetic to their stories or that we're condoning their stories. But they're not over just because you and I don't want to believe in it or we don't choose it for ourselves. We need to somehow shine lights on things and try to help and solve them and voice them so that if a person came to see that show and said, that's me, I got to get out of there. I got to get away from that. You know, whatever it is, or how can I, or is there a chance? I mean, Carousel, but I just mean the subject matter in general.
Yeah,
that's not. There's no solving that show.
And to me, to my point about choosing a piece or watching a piece and trying to watch it through the lens of my consciousness now, is it celebrating that? Not necessarily. If a piece is celebrating that behavior, then I have a problem with it. If it's not celebrating, you know, if Shakespeare gets a lot of raw deal sometimes. I think in True, for example, he's kind of, certainly wasn't a feminist by any stretch of the imagination because he wouldn't have known what that was, but holding up this, okay, here's the patriarchy, here's how men get to act. Mm-hmm. Petruchio gets to act like an incomplete child, and Shakespeare allows Kate, where he usually allows his clowns to comment on that, he allows Kate throughout to comment on, even though we're doing this taming story, and the taming stories were abundant, he's still holding up the mirror going, yeah, but I want to see her go against this thing. Yeah. I want to see what she has to say about it. And that's why I think Shrew actually does it probably better than Kate, the original Kate. But I think we've tweaked it enough. And
we have,
Amanda,
and we've also put back in some lines that Kate were cut.
Oh, yeah. I think we've reinstated more Shakespeare than has ever been done with this piece.
Because Shakespeare actually gave Kate some intelligent retorts
very much,
that were cut in 47 because no one wanted to hear the lady. And so we've tried as much as we can, but we've also maintained that beautiful score, that sexy score.
Yeah.
Warren Carlyle's dancing is kind of above anything I've maybe ever seen. It's just, and the talent.
Bananas.
The talent
it
on the stage.
In the best way. It's bananas.
But I mean, I think, you know, that's the great thing about all this, with talking about gender and talking about, which Shakespeare flip-flop gender a lot, just talking about the eroticism of this show. Yeah. I mean, I think Cole Porter and the Speedwax did a really great job of creating this kind of power struggle thing, this eroticism thing, the little titillating, a dick, a dick, a dick. I mean, all that stuff is in there, which I think makes this piece live on.
Yeah.
I think it makes this piece still interesting and relevant.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in, I've seen a lot of shows lately, and there's so much interesting modern stuff that's going on with Oklahoma being reimagined. And this show to me is just a real, like I said, a good old-fashioned, new-fashioned musical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what you think the role of the sort of traditional musical is in 2019.
I kind of am one of those people that's like, I'm up for anything. I'm up for everything, and make it as crazy as you want, as long as it is truthful and there's honesty in it. And I haven't seen it yet either. I wanted to go to opening night, and I will see it. You know, Oklahoma, I've got to see it. I've seen it in every version of it since I was 4 years old, but because I was from there. But I feel like we can use these pieces not only in their full form, and I have to say that because their original form, because see, I grew up on the original form, and that's how I patterned my life, and I'm lucky that I had an example to look at. It's not my turn anymore. So the girl in the wheelchair,
Allie Stoker,
and I'm sorry that I said Lori's, the girl in the wheelchair, but Allie Stoker.
I want to say
So we use these pieces that we know inside and out in one way, and we reinvent our reality using them. Because it's easier for people who aren't going to do the work, which we've talked about a lot, to try to understand and learn and change and evolve. It's easier to take something people know and put a new example on it so you can say, yeah, I can see that. I can see how that, what you're doing there, and I understand it. Because not everybody will do the work. So it's almost like you're using these original pieces to help you get there. Mm-hmm. You know, Hamilton is became such a cultural phenomenon and an important one because he took something that was so well known and then turned it upside down so we could say, yes, why isn't that just as possible as what was there? Why? Right. Of course it is. And it's there and we see it and everybody loves it. So take Oklahoma and make, you know, take our show even and change the casting a little bit and who cares? Yes. Yes. Indeed. Mm-hmm. So take Oklahoma. Why does 8 Annie have to be, you know, a belting white girl who, you know, does the tan, whatever. She can be whatever she wants. Curly can be whatever he wants. Make Judd a man. Whatever you want to do. I mean, a woman. Do whatever you want. I mean, this piece by Ari and Moyad, the courtroom pieces that about immigration. Mm-hmm. You know, Ruthie Ann Miles was playing a male judge, and the lawyer Richard, can't remember his name. He was also a man, but he was played by a woman actress. They didn't change any of the gender, Your Honor. If he wishes, I will. Nobody did anything, and it took you 5 seconds to invest in that, and then you forgot about it.
Right,
and then you're saying, this is fluid. This is humanity. It's not dependent on certain rules.
Right.
And so things like Oklahoma, things like, you know, Carousel. So we take Carousel or something like that and we change it more than they did. That's why you do it. Now, I'm fine with my college or somewhere doing just a same old production, whatever they want, and the people enjoy it or whatever. But if you have an opportunity, and especially on Broadway, where you might get a few more people to come watch, especially people who can afford it, who might need to watch, you say, I'm going to just take something you know really well, and because you can't stop me, I'm going to put something different for you to look at, and I'm going to see if you can be changed. And that's why I think we have to keep them. They also remind us of where we started from in the first place. Mm-hmm. We're all here because of them. We're still doing Shakespeare plays.
I think I may have just changed my mind on.
You're in love with me right now.
Well, but I think I have a strong opinion about, and I don't know what it is, about the intent of a composer or the intent of a writer, but you make such a great point about why should Broadway not be a place to experiment and.
But when you're a writer and a composer and you release your art.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I totally agree.
You put it up for.
I just think there's something in my head about revivals that I may have to relook at.
I think we use revivals because we know them. And so we turn.
There's something comforting.
We turn you know, what's realistic on its head so that we can educate, I think. As opposed to starting a whole new play where people just say, this is what it is. I'm looking at it for the first time.
Right.
You're telling me exactly what it is.
Right.
This is.
And they have to figure out the language.
Things can be different.
Right.
Things can be,
and you're right about Oklahoma. Better. It's something we know. It's in our it's in the zeitgeist of musical theater. It's something that we know, and so I don't have to relearn a new language this evening in the theater. What is this musical? Yeah. What is the song?
However, I don't think we only need revival. I think we have to have brand new things because then we have to tell the story of when Julie says, "Get the F out of my life," and you are not redeemable until you do something about it. You know, you might have died and gone to heaven, Billy. You don't get to sing the song about the daughter. I do.
Right.
You know, then you write the stories we don't want to see. You write them with some conclusion and some work. And those are new shows.
Right.
But if until someone does that, which people are working on it left and right, we have all sorts of good things happening right now. All sorts. But I think that's why we keep using examples so that people can keep learning. That's my opinion.
It's a good one.
I'm going to get one of those Kit Kat candy bars over there.
Exactly. You guys have been eyeing the Kit Kat box the whole time. You were just like, could this be over already?
No. I'm so happy to be here. I love your show.
Oh,
I've been listening
to
it since you started.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
My guests have been Kelly O'Hara and Will Chase. Kiss Me Kate is running at Studio 54 until June 30th. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.